Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston, and we're talking with you guys today on your first step to take when your spouse wants out. So welcome, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a nice Tuesday afternoon. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And I'm excited to talk about this because this is a question I think is on a lot of people's minds. What do I do? What is the first thing I should do when my spouse wants out? So we're going to show you what has helped thousands of our clients and students so far and what we've learned after working with so many couples. Before we get to that, though, I'm going to share a client win of the week. This one comes with permission from our client. We're calling him C. Hey guys, I've been on the PATH program for about a week now, and I've got to say, I'm pretty shocked at the turnaround I have noticed. Slowly but surely opening up communication with my wife. Just this morning, she initiated conversation via text about our puppy, and there were little jokes in there and playfulness. I'm choosing to take that as a win. Still a lot of work and ground to cover, but staying the course. And I love that because, you know, we're talking about the first things to do. Mm-hmm. And this client is applying some of those very first things, and he's already seeing a turnaround even just within the first week. She's initiating conversation now. She's having some jokes, some playfulness, and he's right. They do have more work to go, obviously, to fully restore their relationship. But even doing some of these first things is making a big difference for him.
Yeah, so, something like this. Yeah. I know it doesn't like seem huge, but you know, generally, if I'm seeing some good reactions, just even in the first little bit of working on the program, that's always a great sign. I would say one of the first obstacles usually is getting a little bit more comfort and a little bit more playfulness within the relationship. I'm not going to say that that's everything or that this client is absolutely set, but you know, seeing that in the first week is always a good sign. So glad to hear that from one of our clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you guys are listening here, I'd love for you to weigh in the comments there. Drop a comment, let us know on a scale of 1 to 10, how committed do you feel like you are to create a happy relationship? Even if your partner's wanting out, you know, they're pulling away from you, how committed are you to turning things around and having that happy relationship? You know, Mark and I, we talk to dozens of people every week, if not 100 at a time, sometimes with the masterclass and stuff that we do. And I found that one of the biggest indicators of whether people actually take action and move forward in the very beginning part of a, you know, your marriage kind of falling apart or your spouse pulling away is your own decision and commitment to doing what it takes to get there. And the good news is that is a choice that you can make entirely on your own. Only you get to make that choice. No one else can make it for you. And it is one of the biggest, you know, deciding factors on if this is going to turn around or not. Because if you're just kind of wishy-washy about it, if you're not really sure, then it's going to be hard. And when it gets hard, it's easy to kind of back out and be like, I guess I'm not going to put in all the effort. It must be hopeless. I must, you know, just need to move on. So really having that commitment to this process is really, really important. And so that is one of the first things we want to do is establish your level of commitment and really dig deep and listen to the inner part of yourself. Do you want to be with this person? Are you still in love with them? Do you want to know that you can live your life with no regrets, that you gave your marriage every chance possible, right? And so again, leave a comment on a scale of 1 to 10. How committed are you to turning your marriage around and creating that healthy, happy relationship? So Mark, we've helped a lot of people over the years. We've been doing this for many years. And there are some big mistakes that almost everyone makes when their partner says they want out. So what are some of those that we tend to see?
Yeah, so I think it's good to start the conversation here because, like, I think there is a natural inclination that a lot of people have if their partner's saying that they're done, they want out. That's a scary situation to be facing. And almost always, like, people really want to, they tend to react by fighting that sort of statement. They say, no, okay, please don't go. It's really not that bad. And look, things can be different. We can be better. I can change. And all of that, I think, is a bit of a mistake. And I'm not going to fault anyone if they've made a lot of those statements. I mean, it's, you want to check in and you want to say, hey, look, we can do this. We can do something different. And I think most people are going to say some variation of these statements. It's not the end of the world, but I do think it's a bit of a mistake if that's especially continued onward, if they stick to those sort of ideas. The big issue with that, in my opinion, Heather, is I think that a lot of that sort of, those sort of statements conveys a certain sort of mindset. It's really much more of a focus on yourself. It's what you want and about you wanting to keep the marriage intact. And quite frankly, I mean, this makes sense. I mean, Heather, I mean, if Ben were to say something like this, I'm sure you would, like, this would be devastating. And, you know, like, for me and Jen, my relationship with Jen, it feels great. It feels like home. It feels very comfortable. And who wouldn't want to try and preserve that sort of relationship where you feel comfortable or loved or cared for? It may not even make sense to you why your partner is trying to step away and why they would maybe want to abandon all that comfort, all those good things that are going on. But like I said, I think that fighting, really pushing against that desire, doesn't do anyone any good. I think we've talked about this in some way or another in the past, Heather. I just want to know your thoughts. Like, why is this a mistake? Why is this a big problem to focus on yourself or to try and convince the other person not to leave when they first start talking about it?
Right. Like you said, that's a very natural kind of instinct. Mm-hmm. We tend to go into fight, flight, or freeze mode, which then we can't help but kind of focus more on ourselves. And I think that's where most people fail to ever turn their relationship around. Is you are focused on yourself. You want them to come back so you can feel better. You want to feel safe. You want to feel secure. You want to get their connection and their commitment so that you know you're going to be okay. The problem that creates, though, is that if you're focused on yourself and your partner is focused on themselves, that does not equal a relationship, right? That just equals two selfish people both pulling for what they want. And you're going to end up pulling further and further away from each other. And what happens is when you are, you know, insisting that they don't feel that way, or you react their desire to go, right? Then the partner that's pulling away, your spouse, isn't going to feel understood. They're not going to feel like you're really trying to get where they're coming from. They may even feel a lack of respect from you about some of the things that they may have said, like, mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about this. Please stop texting me. And if you just keep pushing for them to do those things, they're not going to feel respected, and which is going to further add fuel to the fire and have them want to pull away even more. So it's really important that you learn that there's a different way of doing things. It might be our instinct to go to fight, flight, or freeze mode, right? But we really need to shift our focus, emotionally process through those things, and then shift our focus to understanding our partner, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what's going to help them feel like you respect them, like you're understanding where they're coming from. And we also talk a lot about, we're going to go deeper into solutions in a minute, but, you know, taking the pressure off too, so they don't feel the need to keep pulling away from you more. That's what we help our clients do right off the bat.
Yeah. I think a lot of this, the key word is, it's about validation. You know, I thankfully, I've never really come to this point within my own marriage where Jen is saying, I think I'm done. But, you know, on a much smaller scale, the Jen and I sometimes do have this sort of issue where a problem is brought up and it's just kind of pushed down a little bit. It's saying, you know, is that really a problem? Do we really need to be concerned about that? And it can feel really frustrating. It can feel very invalidating. And luckily, you know, Jen and I have figured out how to communicate about that when we are feeling a little bit invalidated or frustrated.
And luckily, you know, Jen and I.
What ends up happening though is like if you put all that focus on saying, please don't go, look, this can be different, this can change, it looks unreal, I think, to the mm-hmm. partner who's saying that they want out. They, you know, very likely this sort of decision hasn't come about as some sort of light or flippant sort of decision. It's very likely that the person who wants out has been thinking about this for a long time and that the relationship has become limiting, uncomfortable, frustrating, or maybe even something worse than that. And so when you say, look, here's this, I get it. You have this impossible problem. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Why don't you work on this with me? And it just feels as though like you're saying to them that very same thing that we've been talking about here for a moment. It's not that big of a deal. It's invalidating. The concept here is that of the impossible problem. Your partner, if they are saying, I want out, they say, here's this impossible problem. I've tried solving it. Nothing's working. So it's easier to step away. And if you say, you don't need to step away, there's solutions. They don't believe you. And they feel, once again, it's invalidating. So the more you fight against this, the more that you say, no, you can't leave. Or by focusing on making them stay, the concerns about that impossible problem are just pushed down and it feels like a lot more the same, in my opinion. I think that's why that sort of approach tends to just backfire or to push people further away. The leaving partner feels maybe a need to set more boundaries or to distance themselves even more. And it kind of accelerates the process from what I've seen.
Agreed. And I'm seeing in the comments here that are coming in on YouTube that one lady's saying, yeah, I definitely saw my husband pulling away as I was doing those things. Another gentleman's saying, I'm not sure I need to focus on the first step because we've been doing this for months. So I'd be curious, you know, what phase of the relationship you're really at. If you're getting professional help and going through our PATH process, then maybe the first step isn't relevant to you. But if you're trying to go at this alone, and you're trying to like do all these other things and you're not getting any progress, then it's definitely important to go back to the first step, because we always talk about how problems need to be solved in order. And if you're solving them out of order, if you're rushing ahead to things like at the, you know, deepen trust and heal past wounds and past pain, like at the beginning, that's not going to work. So I don't know specifically what your situation is, but to anyone listening, if your partner is still actively pulling away from you, they haven't hit the pause button. And if they haven't hit the pause button, that means you need to go back to these first steps and the fundamentals. So I just thought I'd share that based on a comment that I saw, because we want to make sure we get you guys the best help possible.
So with some of this, here we have these impossible problems. And I just want to clarify like what this really looks like. What do we tend to see as these impossible problems that tend to break down the relationship, or where the partner leaving says, I just can't deal with this? What's pretty typical, Heather?
Okay, yeah. So some of the impossible problems like that we tend to see, right? We're talking about infidelity, you know, trust has been broken, long-standing negative patterns. This could be poor communication, no communication, stonewalling, drifting apart, you know, not making the marriage a priority. We often hear about controlling behavior, like you're trying to control me, or I feel controlled, or sometimes a need to be quote unquote free or to find themselves, right? I need to be free. I need to find myself. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. So all of these, right, these problems can feel impossible to your spouse. They feel like they have no solution. And so if they have no solution, like in their mind, maybe they're saying, well, we've tried this before, or you've said it before, and you always go back to the same thing. Therefore, I don't really trust that you can solve this, or it is solvable, right? So, Mark, why do these problems feel impossible?
Well, I think
spawning out.
Yeah, like you said something there, that a lot of times what happens over the years is it feels impossible because the problem keeps getting visited and nothing comes out of it. What I tend to see is that there's a lot of covert attempts at fixing problems, and it's not very clear that that's what's actually being attempted. So the very frustrated spouse that says, I want to, I don't know, be supported and have my choices be respected or something. They go about and say, they try to exert their opinion, or they try to speak up for what they want, but they don't actually come and directly talk about the general theme of the problem. And so like, there's all these little tiny attempts to try and fix things. And in the mind of the person leaving, they say, well, I've tried to fix this over and over again, nothing's happened. But it's not always clear that's what's happening. So that, I see that as a major factor a lot of times. I often also see problem solving skills tend to be a bit underdeveloped in the relationship if someone's trying to leave. So for example, if a couple frequently sweeps problems under the rug, they say, okay, look, that's not a, like, I get the concern, let's talk about it later, or, you know, I just don't know what to do about it. And so they just don't end up resolving anything. So many times I hear about couples who get into these like intense arguments, and it reaches a peak, and then they just stop talking, and then they never revisit whatever it was that they were arguing about. And so like over and over again, these little patterns add up and ends up making the problems that are presenting in the relationship just in their mind unsolvable. And so it just becomes an easier solution to just leave. And I think why that's important to understand and why we're talking about this big mistake is like the reason why someone is saying they want out is because of these impossible problems. And that's why it's so important not to push that aside, not to focus on making them stay or making them work on things, because to them it feels impossible, and they were likely at this point where there's not a lot of hope. So I do think it's just really that big mistake to focus in on that. So then what, did you have
before we go on into what we should do, because I know it, we've been doing this so long, Mark, I know where you're going. Yeah. I just saw some really good feedback and some comments here. And I'd love to hear from everyone listening, because we do read and respond to every comment that we get. What do you think is your spouse's quote unquote impossible problem? This is also the story or the reason why they're wanting out and they feel like it can't be resolved. And so I'm going to read some of these ones here as some examples from you guys watching live. Impossible problem, years of feeling neglected and feeling second best. Another one here, he thinks we will continue to have the same problem and we see sweep issues under the rug. That's exactly what you were just talking about, Mark.
Yes.
With this pattern that some people have, it's not everyone's pattern, but these problem-solving skills are underdeveloped in the relationship. One of the most important factors to a successful relationship is the ability to give and receive feedback and to resolve issues together as a team. And if those skills are underdeveloped, for example, if like this person watching here, you don't have the ability to resolve issues, they kind of get swept under the rug. Or maybe if there's really the intense arguments, there's a lot of blaming and nothing ever really gets resolved, then your partner's going to believe exactly what was said there. He believes that it will continue to have the same problem, right? Another person says neglected communication. My wife thinks we will never be able to fix any problem and we have past unresolved issues. So that is exactly what we're talking about. And if you have not been able to save your marriage on your own, I want you to know, it is not your fault, because almost no one can do that. Why? Because we don't realize either. We don't really clearly identify what our spouse's actual reasons for wanting out are, because the narrative or the story that they're telling you is just a symptom. That's why it really takes an expert from the outside who knows how to diagnose what's really going on, prescribe the exact treatment plan to get you where you want to go. And that's exactly what Mark and I do. So if you want a free breakthrough session with us and a free marriage analysis where we go in and we uncover what is your spouse really wanting, why are they wanting out, and what are the next steps that you need to take, then just leave a comment and say marriage analysis, and I will get you that link. We are almost completely booked for the week, but we do have spots opening up every few days. So if it's full, let me know. And it's just our Calendly. You can schedule right away and keep checking back if it's full and you can get in. So just leave a comment saying marriage analysis if you want that free marriage analysis session with us. And we'll explore if coaching is a good fit and give you the next action steps that you need to take. And then the other thing that we're seeing here is that, you know, if you don't have these skills, we aren't taught how to have those skills. So I said, it's not your fault if you can't do it on your own, because you might be working really, really hard at applying a good solution to the wrong problem, or maybe the wrong solution to the wrong problem, right? Either way, you're going to be spinning your wheels and not getting anywhere in your relationship. You need to know what the right solution is and what the right problem is so that those solutions are effective and they're moving you forward. And then the second part is developing those skills that really are not taught. So it's really not your fault that you haven't been taught how to have those skills to resolve the arguments or sweeping issues under the rug, whatever that pattern might be. And so the good news is that you can learn them, and we can help you with that too. So let's go deeper, Mark, into what should people do instead? If these are some of the mistakes, right? Mistakes being trying to react by fighting your partner's desire to want out, right? Having your focus be too much on yourself and your own fear, because that fear is going to repel the very thing that you're wanting, right? And another mistake, not taking time to understand your partner's perspective to the point where they've built up this impossible problem, right? We've talked about why those problems feel impossible to your spouse. Mm-hmm. Now we understand that these are some of the mistakes. Let's go into what are the solutions? What are the first steps you should take when your partner wants out?
Well, I actually kind of want to skip a very mini step here. And so almost always when we are working directly with clients, we do take a little bit of time to help our clients to understand their spouse's perspective. And I absolutely do think that that's necessary. But It's not generally a huge, huge step. And I think it can be done, you know, if you're effective with communicating and, you know, have some basic human skills, then you can get around that. I think there's a lot of good things that can be done. There's a lot of good tips that can be suggested for trying to understand your partner and to provide empathy and validation. But I want to get into a little bit more of a substantial step. And I'm going to sound a bit cliche, and then I'm going to explain things here. So I'm going to suggest that the first step here is working on yourself. and I say that sounds cliche, and I actually want to adjust it a little bit, because I think that there's a mistake with that sort of concept in these sort of situations, because I do think that a lot of experts who say, hey, just, you know, work on yourself, don't worry about them, they'll tell you, okay, that means get to the gym, go see some friends, work on some hobbies, things like that. And I think that is really kind of a misguided piece of advice. I think that a lot of that advice, if it has any impact at all, it's because that it's trying to help you be in a much better position so that you can approach the relationship with a lot more calm. But it doesn't actually solve what we were talking about earlier, this whole concept of the impossible problem. No, instead, like a lot of the way that we approach this sort of concept with High Thrive Coaching is we say, hey, your partner doesn't have any confidence, any hope that this impossible problem can be solved. And so when I'm talking about working on yourself, it means trying to take responsibility for your pieces there and try to like almost create a position that change as possible on your end. I'm not even talking about like trying to get your partner to work on things with you. I'm not trying to say that, you know, like it takes two to tango or anything like that. I'm just saying, hey, look, take some time to see if you can solve your part of the problem. And without even worrying about what the other person is doing or how much they're contributing to that. Because I think being able to build that position up and say, look, I've made some changes and I've done my thing and I've done all this to solve this my part of the problem, makes it so much easier to do a lot of other things with fixing the relationship. You know, it allows you to start asking your partner to do a little bit more or to start building up some cooperation. It allows you to start identifying some common goals and working a little bit together. But I think it does all start with that cliched sort of statement of working on yourself, just adjusted from what most other people are saying. But I'm sorry.
Right. It is different than what you might think it is initially. It's really about establishing changes in yourself, taking accountability for your part in the relationship and in the pattern that led you to this point, and doing this without pressure to get back together.
Yes.
That's a really big, important part. And why is that so important to do it without the pressure to get back together, Mark?
Well, I think, you know, here's the thing. When someone says that they're done, we'd all like to say, you know, it would be amazing if your partner would work on things and that you need that commitment. But if they're saying that they're done, a lot of the general expectations for a good, healthy relationship just kind of go out the window. You really can't assume commitment. Actually, I would, by default, most of the time, if someone's saying that they're done, I assume the opposite of that. Like, you can't assume that your partner should work on things if they're a good person. And we kind of throw all those sort of concepts away. And while it would be awesome if they would work with you, I mean, that does show some amount of commitment. The main focus should be on you taking responsibility for your own part. I'm going to point it out again. If your partner is saying that they're done, that they're one step away, they're thinking that the problem is too difficult, it's impossible to solve, so why would they bother? They're distinctly lacking hope, and your job here is to provide that hope in some small ways where you can have some impact, and that's going to be on yourself. So if you can show them those changes, and if you can show that, hey, something is possible, then we can start building up their confidence and their ability to impact the relationship later.
Yeah, there is a shift that comes when you are making changes in yourself and you're learning those skills that you just haven't had up until now, right? Now you're going to learn them. Now you're going to learn how to communicate, how to have healthy boundaries, how to show respect, understanding, empathy, right? And when you do that in a way that you're doing these changes for you, no matter what happens in the relationship, that is going to go a long way. More often than not, I see people working on themselves, but still trying to like manipulate their partner to come back. They're making these changes short term. They're making them out of fear and desperation. And your partner is going to sense it. It's going to repel them. They're going to know that this isn't safe still, and that it is just a manipulation. Now, at the same time, like clients that do work on changing themselves, their spouse is going to still have resistance. Mm-hmm. Okay, I see some comments here about some of the changes that you guys have been making. And you're saying, you know, this makes sense. Okay, wait, no, not that one. Okay, what if your spouse says it doesn't matter if I've made changes to break the pattern? And that's exactly what happens in the later stages of the relationship. We actually expect that resistance. In fact, I think we've talked some about this, Mark, but we're actually including this as one of the main phases of the restoration process. Mm-hmm. Is an entire phase about resistance. We expect your spouse to be resistant to the changes that you're making. In fact, we often see that the negative behaviors they're doing usually increases. Why? Well, could be a variety of reasons, but they're often feeling like they need to hold on to their story even more. It's their defense mechanism, or it's their excuse, it's their justification for why they're wanting out, so they don't have to feel so guilty maybe about what they're doing, or they're afraid of getting hurt again. And so they're not ready to let go of that resistance yet. And that's okay. We're actually going to let them have that resistance to the changes, resistance to seeing the changes, resistance to wanting to work on the relationship at the beginning, because it's part of the healing process. It does take time and consistency. And eventually, even just you saying like, I know we're not supposed to go like super deep into this next step. That's not like the point of this exact podcast episode with you guys, but I just want to like paint the picture here, because I think a lot of you are like, well, I'm making changes, and they don't believe them, or they say that they're not permanent, or they don't care about the changes, or they don't even notice the changes. They're so far gone from me. They blocked me so much that they don't even see that I'm changing. And so I just want to like kind of allude to the future step here, where you say that it's okay to have that resistance. And just the fact that you say, I understand why you don't want to work on this. I understand why you don't want to talk to me. And I understand that you have a lot of resistance here. Even just saying that lessens the resistance, which is a fascinating thing. Like if like my son really didn't want to go to this youth conference this week, right? And it was a thing that we had paid for and we decided months ago, and then it came to it and he's like, I don't want to go. And I'm like, okay, I can see you don't want to go, and you don't have to go. I'm not going to make you. And just then, even just saying that, I see that you're resistant to this. I see that you don't want to do this. Like, he felt heard. He felt understood. You know, he felt like I was respecting where he's coming from. That's just a minor example. But when we allow people in our lives to have their own choices, that alone lessens the resistance significantly. And we come from a place of like, I feel, you know, your spouse is going to be like, I feel like you understand where I'm coming from. I feel like you get me now. And that in and of itself is going to help lessen that resistance. I also got a question here, Mark. This would be really cool to answer.
Sure.
Go up to it on my screen if my mouse will work. Oh, shoot. It's like frozen. Okay. Well, I'll see if I can pull it up in a minute. But yeah, go on here.
The next piece. Yeah, I want to answer a little bit of like the other comment that you mentioned there, where they were saying, well, I've made these changes and they say it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter how much I change. So commenting on that, very, very likely in that scenario, it's coming from this idea of, you know, it's not always the person leaving. It's not always that they're saying, well, you're to blame and you're to fault and it's 100% you. I do encounter a lot of situations where the person leaving says, I just don't love you anymore, or I can't get over these feelings. I feel like I can't come back into this. It's this kind of sense of, I can't get over certain emotions or something. Once again, it is this idea of an impossible problem. Maybe it's this infidelity and they say, I've fallen in love with someone else and I just can't let that go. I still say that the first step is you yourself establishing some change, but I'm going to allude to the future processes as well, is there does need to be some effort given to helping your partner feel some sense of control over the outcomes. And that's, you know, like a lot of like what is being set up as you are making changes yourself. I think it's really difficult if you start off saying, well, okay, I'll do this and you do that, because once again, there's not that commitment. But if you take away a lot of the difficulty from your end and you make your path clear so that they just need to have a little bit of cooperation, a little bit of effort on their side to start making an impact, then that becomes a bit of a snowball effect and we can help them build their confidence and their ability to make that impact. But yes, we're, like you said, we're mostly focused here on this first step here today. And a lot of it is mostly about making sure that you are not just working on yourself by making yourself happier, but that you are actually taking responsibility, that you are solving that impossible problem on your end. that way it sets up everything else. It's just a setup. It doesn't do a whole lot by itself, but it allows so many other things to happen.
Right. And as you do that, you know, you work on taking accountability for your part in this. And I heard it once said by a mentor, give them no reason to rebel. So it's really about shifting some of the patterns that you've contributed to the situation. Like, we're all in a pattern in our marriage. I'm in a certain pattern with my husband. You're in a certain pattern with your spouse. There's a certain way that you greet each other at the end of the day, or you don't. There's a certain way that you talk about problems, or you don't. There's a certain way that you respond when they come at you with some kind of blame or criticism or a false accusation. Maybe you get defensive and then they get defensive and it blows up, right? So we have these different patterns. What we want to do is identify, what are those patterns? And again, that can be hard to see because you can't read the label when you're inside the bottle, right? We're all inside the bottle of our own relationship. And so that's why it takes an expert, someone from the outside that knows how to read the label on your bottle, diagnose what's really going on, and prescribe the right treatment plan to get you where you want to go. But as we look at what patterns are going on inside of your relationship, and just leave a comment, say pattern, if you want more help with this, we can have a conversation about what that looks like to identify those patterns. You're going to shift those patterns. We'll identify what they are, and we'll show you specific for your relationship what needs to happen to make that shift. So the point here being that in general, the relationship needs to feel more calm, more stable, more grounding. As you shift those patterns, it's going to get your partner's attention, and it's going to help them see that things are different here. What is different about Tom and Grant and Sarah, right? What's different here about them? I am maybe even a little bit curious about that. We sometimes see curiosity coming in at this very first initial stage, right? And the sense that there's hope that this impossible problem could actually have a solution. Now, sometimes they're going to go into hope and do what our client's spouse did up here at the beginning. We talked about how she started opening up more. She started initiating conversation. There was jokes and playfulness. That typically comes later for most of our clients. We call that when your spouse starts taking steps towards you. That typically comes a little bit later. It happened pretty fast for him in his own situation. For you, it's going to get their attention. It's going to help them see that their story about this impossible problem actually might have a solution. And for some of you, it's going to have them ramp up the negative behavior even more, because they want to pull you back into the story. They want to pull you back into the justification of why they're doing what they're doing. And that's okay. It's still just part of the process. There will come a time and place when they know that these changes are real. They believe them, they know them, they see them, and they want to work on it with you. We call that flipping the script, where your spouse starts to take steps towards you. They want to spend time with you. They want to work on the issues. They want to have conversations with you. And sometimes that can be the hot and cold. Some of you might be in the teeter-totter effect, right? Where they're warm and then they pull away. They want to talk to you and then they shut down and block off communication again. And we help you, guide you through all of those different phases as well. But eventually they will know that these changes are real and that you've done them from a very genuine place, not a place of manipulation, you know, not a place of trying to just get them back, but this is who you really are, and you'll know it and they'll know it, and they will see you for who you really are. They will accept you for who you really are, flaws and all, and they'll want to be with you. They'll want to have that kind of relationship. So that is what we help our clients do in the big picture, kind of nutshell of the process. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that you stop any of those behaviors that are going to push them further away, that you get out of the fight, flight, or freeze mode, because it's only going to cause your partner to want to pull away from you more. And making sure that we do build in that perspective on what's going on with your spouse, right? And what changes you can make, how you can take accountability. Now, Mark, I saw a really good question here about taking accountability, right? And I say, taking responsibility is important. Is there any point at which it is useful to express that accountability to your partner? Example, in like a therapeutic apology letter. We talk a lot about solving problems in the right order. What do you generally recommend as far as expressing that accountability?
So essentially the question is like, when do we introduce accountability to the other person?
Yeah. Like, when do we share it with our partner?
Okay. I think this is really dependent on a lot of things. So a lot of what we've talked about today is under the assumption that the other person is not really willing to look at themselves or willing to consider making changes right then. They're just considering leaving as the solution. If that's the situation, then you need to introduce that accountability a little bit later. We talked a bit today about starting to work on yourself. And very specifically, what I mean by that is, you know, not just a surface level working on yourself, but like looking at the patterns of behavior, how you were contributing to some of those negative interactions, really looking at the full picture. It's some deeper work. And then once you've done that, just to explain when accountability starts getting introduced, is we then can start like saying, okay, I've made some changes, I've calmed some things down. Let's start building up some cooperation around some shared goals. Like, let's try to have some better respect. Let's be able to work together as parents. And when you can identify some of those goals, then it's easier to start saying, okay, well, what's my responsibility and what's your responsibility? So that's, if things are really, if there's a lot of resistance and your partner doesn't want to work on things, it takes a few steps before you can start getting to that accountability. And that accountability is a little bit lighter at first, and then it can build up. If your partner is like in a therapeutic environment and saying, you know, I'm willing to take a look at some of my own, you know, things here, that can absolutely get introduced a lot earlier in the process. You know, I've had many couples come in together where they're saying, okay, let's take a look at this and let's see what's going on, even if one partner is a little bit more reluctant. And that's a situation where, you know, it's a lot easier to introduce that accountability sooner in the process because that person is willing to look at themselves. And I think that's the big telltale sign, is like, when are they willing to take a little bit of responsibility themselves? Because if you try to force it on them, then you're going to get situations that backfire.
Agreed. And so with all of this, I would love for you guys to leave a comment here and let us know, what is the primary problem in your relationship? Do you feel like it is a spouse that's wanting a divorce? They're wanting separation. They don't want to work on the marriage. Leave a comment. Let me know if that's your situation, or is it about affairs, trust issues, or is it about communication? So of those three, what do you feel like is the biggest challenge that you're facing? And then we will send you a free training that I just did last week. I'll send you the replay of this free training, and you can get some solutions to those specific problems that will help you in exactly with what you're dealing with in your relationship. Mark, one last comment, and then we'll go to our marriage myth buster.
Sure.
This comment comes, I've dove into personal development, and it continues. He hasn't filed for divorce, even though he says it's what he wants. I don't fight him on that. Confused as to my next moves or what not to do. And then later, I believe the same person said it's been 2 years that they've been in this space and that it's a hard place to be in.
It would be a hard place to be in. Now we are getting into those next steps, but that's fine. We can talk about this very briefly. And I do have actually a good amount of clients that come in this very same spot. They're like, okay, this has been going on for like a year or more, and I've been really working on myself, and they're telling me that they recognize that there's some changes. And I'm like, great, that's wonderful. That's a good place to start. Usually the next step is identifying like what kind of goals the person who's wanting out has. So this might mean something simple, like they want more calm in their life, they want more peace, or they want more freedom. But the more specific you can get, the better. Like they say, hey, we're still having arguments about kids, or there's a lot of tension around money, things like that. Because the big goal at that stage is creating some common goals to work towards, even if it's not reconciliation right then. The aim in trying to build some common goals there is all about is mostly about trying to introduce a little bit of that accountability. like, hey, if you want to be good parents together, I'm absolutely willing to do this, but I'll need this other piece from you. I'd really appreciate if you can communicate a little bit more. I would really appreciate if you don't use disrespectful language to me, and instead we can talk to each other about problems. And I always try to position those goals in terms of positive actions that can be taken rather than negative things that should be cut out. But the, like I said, we're trying to get the other person actually proactively taking some action to solve some problems, so that they gain that confidence that problems can be solved between the two of you. And that's like that next phase, I think.
Yeah. And that's going to get you out of the limbo that you just commented about that you're in right now, where your husband thinks you aren't happy and you can't keep doing this. And the reality is no one should have to keep doing that for years and years and years. If you've been doing this for that long, then there's definitely some steps that you need to take to move yourself forward from that phase. Even if, you know, you're listening to this and you're like, we're stuck in the friend stage. Maybe we have respect. We have good communication. We even get along pretty good. But they say there's no romance. They say there's no passion. That's a big mistake that a lot of people can get stuck in at the end of a restoration of a relationship, is that now you've broken those patterns of dysfunctional communication. You've broken the patterns of arguments and blame walling. Oh my gosh, I'm making up words. Blaming and stonewalling. We just coined a new term, Mark. At least I did. blame walling. Anyway, so you've stopped those unhealthy patterns and now you're really understanding each other. You're really able to communicate about anything. You have this great amount of respect and ease. Like the tension is reduced in the relationship. It's gone. Like you feel like you're friends. You don't want to get stuck in the friend stage. So no matter what stage you are at, you want to make sure that you have the tools and the guidance on the action steps to take to start to see changes in your relationship and move it forward. So these things are going to go, we kind of say you've got to go slow at first to go fast. In fact, I was just interviewed in another podcast called the Chick Chat podcast last week. And she's like, Heather, I was astounded. I was on your website and I was like, all these people are like turning their relationship around and they're doing it so fast. And I had to kind of chuckle because on the inside, like with our clients, they don't feel like it's necessarily like super fast, but it is way faster than doing it the other way that doesn't work, right? So it is about really pulling back from the things that aren't working, that are pushing your spouse further away, identifying where can you make changes in your patterns? Where can you make changes to address the issues that are creating this impossible problem for your spouse? How can you take the pressure off, which often feels like you're going against the instinct, right? To put the pressure on, like full court press on your spouse to try to get things shifted quickly. No, we're going to take the pressure off. And that's what I mean. We got to slow down the momentum of the divorce train, your spouse wanting a divorce, heading right off the cliff. We got to hit those brakes and slow things down. Give you some time, get your spouse to agree to give you time. That's the next step. I can't help it. I was like, want to give everything as much as I can. But if you guys want a training on exactly how to flip the script so your spouse is chasing after you, how to have them hit that pause button, then leave a comment and say, flip the script. And I'll make sure that we do an episode on that coming up soon. All right, now let's go to our marriage mythbuster. This one came probably from a comment in one of our groups. Our Thriving Marriage Facebook group has over 40,000 members, by the way, one of the largest groups out there. This one is, silence is always a sign of trouble in a marriage. So I'm going to say right off the bat too, I agree with what Mark's going to share. This is somewhat true. Mark, what's your perspective on silence in a marriage? Is it a sign of trouble?
So a lot of times when you come to these mythbusters, we say, okay, no, the statement's false, but no, this is, could possibly quite possibly be true. And I'm not saying it like 100%, because I don't like saying 100% with many things, but silence here can mean a lot of different things. It could just mean that the couple is complacent or comfortable. It could also mean that there's simmering resentment or anger underneath. It could mean that maybe they're just focused on other priorities, or it could just be a very temporary, acute sort of silence and not a huge deal at all. And while silence may not guarantee that there are deep problems in a relationship, it is possible that it is a precursor to other issues, bigger problems potentially. And it generally means that there's less connection or less seeking each other out. Like I can totally picture a couple who just, they're not super social. They don't need a lot of interaction. They need a lot of, you know, self time, a lot of downtime. And it's not that big of a deal, but usually that's not what we're describing when we're saying silence. We're usually describing a shift in communication. And generally, if there is less communication, it generally means that communication isn't being rewarded. And over time, it will generally, at the very least, result in a couple drifting apart. So for many couples, short-term and sudden silence might be just simply an indication that the silent partner doesn't know how to bring up a concern and have it go somewhere productive. Sure, but it also might simply mean that they need to process what's going on by themselves for a bit. I know you've talked about how like Ben needs a little bit of time to think things over. I know I myself am very similar. I don't always want to talk right away, but that's not really silence. That's time for processing before we actually do communicate. So I will say that long-term silence is pretty much always a sign of deeper trouble. And silence in general is at least worth looking into. You know, like there's a lot of things like in the medical field where you're like, okay, this symptom or that symptom may not be something serious, but it has the potential to be. And that, I think that's the same sort of case here with silence, is like, it's possible that it's not something super, super serious, but it has the potential to become something serious if left alone. So always worth checking out.
Yeah, exactly. A comment here that your spouse is taking 5 weeks to process. Yeah, that's definitely a sign that there's deeper things that need to be resolved in the relationship.
No, I think at most when I'm talking about people taking time to process, I would say at most what in terms of what is healthy is like a day or two. And even that, I feel like, you know, if you can't talk something through within a couple of days, you really kind of need to think about how you're approaching problems.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, my friends, we are surprising you guys with the most comments given during our live stream here. We're going to gift you our Path Marriage course. And so this is a powerful course that I think 16 or 17,000 students now have gone through this. And so this is revealing our path process to help you save your marriage. So I will be in the next 24 hours adding up your comments and seeing who the winner is and sending you that training, our gift to you as a thank you for joining and being willing to work on your marriage. We're here to help you and serve you in the best way possible. Next week, we're going to share with you, can my marriage be saved? This is where we're going to do a live Q&A with you. So you have the opportunity to submit your marriage situation to us as long as all of your questions that you want answered, and we will go through those live next week. So if you want to get in on that, I'm letting you guys know a week early, just leave a comment and say Q&A, and I will get you the link where you can submit your marriage situation and your questions so that we will answer them live with you guys next week. So thank you for joining, Mark, and thank you all. I hope that this has been of service to you, and we cannot wait to see your marriage thrive.
See everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.